Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the Queers of Time podcast.
I'm Matt.
I'm James.
I'm Kemi.
And I'm Kat.
And this is a podcast to talk about all the gay stuff in the Wheel of Time.
Because we're gay and we like the Wheel of Time. And as always, thank you to Lurx, our feral venator of Swain. And today we have another Patreon to thank. Thank you, Anya, for supporting us. We very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Anya. So as many of our listeners know, we have started to branch out from explicitly Wheel of Time stuff, but we've yet to really branch out from explicitly queer stuff. And we're still not really doing that, but we're sort of doing that today because the topic is giving love, not to necessarily queer characters, but to side characters who could get a little bit more love in the Wheel of Time series. So we brought our notes on our favorite side characters who might not get as much love as Rand or Nynaeve or Moraine.
I mean, maybe some of our side characters already get a lot of love and we don't care. We just wanted to talk about our favorite side characters.
This is true.
Sometimes you just take the opportunity and you're like, you know what? I'm going to do it.
I know many people have already walked the walk and rent the rent. Still today.
I mean, I don't, honestly, I don't remember Camille's side characters that they put in the notes because it's one of the S Sid Eyes.
Oh yeah, but like my side character is very much a minor character.
It's very like, yes, like if there was ever,
there's nothing in her wiki pages, okay? Everything, all of the reason why I like her are things that I've been made up in not just my mind, mm-hmm. but in other people's mind, and then mm-hmm. infected other people's, I would mm-hmm. say.
Yes.
I can start with mine if you want, then.
Absolutely. Since we're talking about it already, so go for it.
All the Aes Sedais.
Yes, it's an Aes Sedai, so there's already like so many Aes Sedai. It's even worse, it's an Aes Sedai starting with a letter S.
Uh-huh.
It's Cyanide. Okay, Cyanide, I bet that most readers of the Wheel of Time do not remember.
Oops.
And that's okay, because I read her wiki pages, and she literally does not do anything just by herself. She doesn't have anything specific about her. It's just that she's gay.
You know what? That's enough sometimes. Sometimes that's enough.
That's enough. It's... So in the plots of the Wheel of Time, she's among the Aes Sedai from the Salidar camp that she's part of the embassy that is sent to Rand, and that she's among the Aes Sedai that ends up helping during the Dumas Vel's battle and then have to kneel in front of Rand.
Yeah.
And as a result, she becomes an apprentice to the Wise Ones, mm-hmm. and then end up following Perrin. During all of his adventure post Dumas Vel, winning, tracking Massima, then tracking Fael, then the White Cloaks, and I don't think she's even mentioned during the last battle.
I don't think so either.
So I'm assuming she's still alive.
Yeah.
But in The Companion, she's one of the few officially queer character of the Wheel of Time. She mm-hmm. is a Green sister. I think her companion notes say she's a lesbian, but she does not hate men.
I think so, yeah.
I think so.
Which, okay.
Wait, a lesbian that doesn't hate men? What's this?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's representation.
Exactly. There you go.
Are there any lesbians who need that representation, though? Because they all hate men, right?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly do.
That's why they become lesbians.
Yeah.
Of course, of course.
It's the only reason why.
Anyway, she has two warders and she's pretty stern with them. She's a Carianin.
Mm-hmm.
She's basically Moraine, but gay, because mm-hmm. she's like tiny like Moraine, Carianin like Moraine.
Mm-hmm.
But at least she's not gay until graduation.
This is true.
Like Moraine.
This is true.
And apparently, so something that does not appear in the books, but is clearly present in one of Robert Jones and Aes Sedai notes, one of his personal notes, is that Cyanide used to have a relationship with Aliandre, who is the queen of... Shit, I didn't look that up, but like she's a queen that keeps following Perrin at some point.
Yeah, she's queen of...
Gael'dan? Something like that, maybe?
Maybe Gael'dan.
I feel like it's Gael'dan.
I think that's right, too.
Yeah. And it's hilarious because Cyanide and Aliandre spent books in proximity of each other, and it's never mentioned about their relationship, but Jordan was like, yes, they totally had a relationship in the past. Mm-hmm. That's why Aliandre trusts Cyanide a little bit.
It is, she is the queen of Gael'dan.
Yeah. But no, why do I actually like that character? It's, so there's someone in this fandom whose name is Roman, and they have been obsessed with Cyanide for years. I think their first fanfic about Cyanide like was maybe in, I don't know, 2020, something like that.
Yeah.
And they're great artists. They have drawn many, many fan arts of Cyanide with like tiny Cyanide with two big burly warders. And they have a bunch of fanfic with the relationship between Cyanide and one of the wise ones that hang around during this apprenticeship. They have actually, if there's one fanfic to read, it's a fanfic about Cyanide's point of view of Dumas Vale's battle, because it turns this very messy battle into something very strategic and very well done. And the only reason why the Perrin and Rand and everything made it out is just because Cyanide was like, yeah, your plan is bullshit. Please let me do something.
Love it.
Yeah. And I'm not Cyanide biggest stan. Roman is Cyanide biggest stan. I had many opportunities in the past to talk with Roman about Cyanide and to talk with other friends about Cyanide. And we have whole headcanons about that character. And it's, you know what? In some series, it is nice to have a side character that you kind of don't know enough about them.
Yeah.
Because you can have your whole ideas of who they are and nobody can tell you you're wrong.
Exactly. And it takes the pressure off too, because you don't have to worry about like, what if they make a character choice that like you're not into? You don't have to worry about that because this is, it's all in your head.
You can write the past relationship between Cyanide and Aliandre. Who's going to tell you that you're wrong? Jordan is dead.
Wow.
That was maybe a bit violent.
Okay, Camille, good kind.
Please let's not use that as a title.
I was just gonna say.
Oh, I think that's a title right there.
No, we can't do that. Otherwise, we're never gonna have like we're never gonna be able to talk to Maria ever.
We'll never get Maria. We'll never get Harry.
We could.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I doubt. I mean, technically, this episode comes out after Jordan Kun, I think. So we could.
Hey, we could be golden.
This is true.
We could have a very good connection with Maria before.
We could be golden is all I'm saying.
Imagine like us having a very deep conversation with Maria like on the weekend. And then on the Monday, she looks it up and the first episode is...
Thank you, Kimmy, good kind.
Yeah, so let's not use that title. But that's like one of my favorite side characters and nobody cares about them. And there's been like, I don't even think she's part of the Greenwell Cup because, she was this year because I think I've ranted about like...
She may have been.
People have ranted about Cyanide enough that no Ali knows who Cyanide is.
Yes, she may have been.
But she lost very quickly.
Yes.
When we did the Surin Cup back in June about the queerest character of the Wheel of Time books, like I had to tweet again about Cyanide, and still 90% of the folks didn't know about her. She didn't make it past one round.
Oh no.
I mean, she's an Aes Sedai, so...
This is the truth. This is the truth.
But she's the Aes Sedai who's gay. Mm,
that's the thing.
Like, okay, like, the thing is that there's not a lot of queer characters in those books. And she's genuinely one of the few positive representation of, like, queerness because
listen,
she's a good person.
We have the Swarian Cup is coming up.
And look at the bright side. Because no one knows who she is mm-hmm. always going to be in the Swarian Cup and always. We will always be able to advocate for her.
Mm-hmm.
Because if she won...
We're spreading the good word.
Fuck you.
We wouldn't be...
We're spreading the good word!
If she won...
Matt is basically saying that she's never going to win anyways.
I'm aware what Matt is saying. I'm aware what Matt is implying.
If she won, we wouldn't be able to talk about how great she is in the Soiree
Cup. Oh my God.
And advocate for her because she wouldn't be in the cup anymore.
You know what? Rafe is a good person. Maybe Rafe will have Seonin in the TV show and then
hey.
Everyone will know about her. And we'll be able to say that we were there for Seonin mm-hmm. before Seonin was even there for herself.
Exactly.
Okay, sweetie. I believe that you believe. And I'm so happy for you.
Listen, it could happen. It could happen.
One can dream.
It might happen. We don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, who wants to talk about the side character? Please save me.
I can talk about mine.
Okay.
I would like to bring to the table... We've talked about, I tried to advocate for her as best I could during the Grinwell Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, you know what? Considering, she did not terrible. I don't think she got eliminated right away. I don't think so anyway.
I don't remember.
Eganeen. I can never pronounce her name correctly. Eganeen?
Is that how you say it?
Eganeen?
I say...
No, it's definitely not...
Eganeen for me.
Eganeen, right?
Eganeen for me.
Eganeen?
Yeah, I kind of insist on...
So you do the...
But I don't know whether that's true or not.
Listen, who knows?
We'll see if she ever gets casted.
We'll see. I hope. Oh my God.
I hope. And I imagine no Eganeen.
You just produced a new fear for me.
I have one fear.
One fear. No Eganeen. Yes, so she is... I just think she's a really fascinating character. I think she's a really well, for a side character, I think she is really well written too. Like she has a very clear and like easily like clockable arc that happens.
Yeah.
And you know, like she goes from someone who is like extraordinarily devoted to her culture and completely bought into the whole Sean Chan terrible thing to ending up being like, I mean, not besties with Nynaeve and Elaine, but kind of like not besties with Elaine and Nynaeve. Like they end up, you know, getting closer and she likes them a lot.
I feel like you should say what you wrote, you know, that mm-hmm. post bullet point on your again in 101.
Which the first one?
Your fourth.
Oh, the fourth one. Oh, she falls platonically in love with both of them. Because of course she does.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Because of course she does.
Who would not?
There's no other
Who
option.
Would not? Yeah. Yeah. She saves them. She saves them from being kidnapped yet again. And then she's like, wait a second. Oh no. Oh no.
Oopsies.
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 It's just a giant oopsie. Because she's like, oh, I like them.
And I oop.
And they're and she's like, but wait, these are channelers. What do I do with this information? And it's a struggle for her. And she goes through like highs and lows and everything like that. But in the end, she works it out, and she ends up like, I mean, she ends up at the very end with Egwene protecting Egwene. Like, what? It's so cool.
She ends up with Egwene. I was like, did I miss a relationship, like a romance between Egwene and Egwene?
That would be something.
Honestly.
That would be better than Gawain, honestly.
Egwene, better for Egwene than Gawain was.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Egwene, like, she would be great for Egwene. I would love it.
New ship. You thick writers, get on it.
Get on it.
I'm sure.
There's gotta be, right? There's gotta be.
I don't know, honestly. I don't really read fanfic anymore, so mm-hmm. like I don't know what fics are out there, but yeah. I'm saying that Eganeen and Egwene.
There's no way someone's not thought of this before. It's gotta be. Because like she's like, I feel like she's such like an alive character too. Like she's someone that you can kind of put yourself in her shoes. Obviously not like in the sense that you're in part of, well, maybe you're part of a culture that's like super into slavery and like you know, like all of that, which it that may not be true, but we won't get into that right now. But like I think she's really relatable because it's not just like where she is presented with new information and immediately is like, okay, I'm going to change my ways. That's not what happens at all. In fact, that's the opposite kind of what happens because she goes back to the Shan Chan. She's promoted. She gets this like really big promotion. And then I think at that point, Bail Damon comes back into her life. And she ends up buying him, which ew, but she's like, I mean, considering the circumstances, best possible option? ? And yeah, they end up getting married. She gets to marry a pirate. And I feel like that is the greatest reward. One of the greatest rewards that you can receive. I just think she's really cool. I hope that she's in the show. I think she would be like, she would be such a good, I feel like we need characters like her on the on the show, especially to show that cultures are not a monolith and there are always going to be people that are either they're already thinking these things or they're capable of thinking outside of what they've always been taught.
Exactly.
You know, like similar to it's, and I mean, this might segue into one of Matt's points.
Oh, I'm not letting go of that.
I know. one of Matt's people, but I think with like, with even the Ashas, like, I think it's important to have red sisters shown who are not like evil, you know, they're not dark friends.
Evil man hating lesbians.
Evil man hating lesbians. No, don't get me wrong. I love Leandrin very, very much. Uh-huh. However, we need, I think it shows, it just gives a lot of depth. I just like her a lot.
Yes.
She's just really cool.
Talking about Leandrin, did you see Kevin's tweet about her?
I did, and it's perfect. It is perfect. I did, and it's perfect. That's her in a nutshell.
Yeah.
That's Leandrin right there. Mm. Yeah.
Everyone hates me because I'm gay. Well, I killed a few person, but it's because I'm gay that they hate me.
It's the gay thing.
It's the gay thing.
It's the gay thing. I mean, is that not like that's essentially Caitlyn Jenner, right? That's essentially Caitlyn Jenner. Am I allowed to say that?
Fuck her.
Talking about the gay thing, I am sorry to tell you that there's only 5 fanfic with Egwene, and only one of them involve Egwene, and I think it's only platonic.
A travesty.
All right, then you fanfic writers, get out there and start.
Get on that. We are sending up. Consider this. We are putting up the bat signal.
Enemies to lovers, get it going.
Enemies to lovers, bat signal, Egwene and Egwene. Come on,
Egwene and Egwene.
It's actually kind of sad because one of them is it's a one shot where Egwene's, if I say that, I'm going to cut that, but I'm just going to tell you.
Okay.
Ooh, that would be so interesting. Anyway.
But yeah.
I cut that because I kind of don't want to mention the...
That's fair. That's fair.
Accidental spoiler.
Yeah. Oh, are we no spoilers?
I thought we were.
I said a lot of spoilers.
Because I plan on going full spoilers.
We are
going
to have full spoiler, but like, okay. I think a lot of spoilers we said are like kind of minor things about specific characters. Like you said a lot of things about Egwene, but I mean.
It's a big one. Yeah. It's, I would argue, it's like the big one.
It's the one you cannot say to people, yeah, you can listen to that if you don't care very much about spoiler. Like it's.
Exactly. Because people will care about that. They are going to care about that one. Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. I feel like, you know, we generally like we can always put like a spoiler thing before the...
Yeah, but there's a difference between putting like a light spoiler for some books or putting a heavy spoiler for all of the books until the last battle.
Mm-hmm.
It's
That reminds me of an Am I the Asshole post about someone who skipped a funeral of a close family member because a Marvel movie was coming out and she did not want to be spoiled for it. So she had to see it the weekend of the funeral and she didn't want to be spoiled, but she also didn't want to get off of social media. So she skipped the funeral. I think of her like, it was a close family member.
Oh
like
my
it was
God.
A really close family member. She just skipped it because she didn't want spoilies for the Marvel movie.
I have a very important question and I realize that this is not the point of it, but what movie was it? Did they say?
It was a Marvel movie, so I'm assuming it was one of the Avenger movies.
Okay.
Probably Endgame.
Maybe Endgame. Maybe it was Endgame.
Probably. Still not justified.
No, I'm not saying it was justified.
No, I know. Sorry.
But there's a difference. There's a difference between, like, missing, like, Thor 2. Like you're dipping out to see Thor 2, and you're dipping out to, like, not to go see Avengers Endgame. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah. No, boss. Like, I'm sorry. No matter the quality of the Marvel movie, you don't skip a funeral.
I know. I am not disagreeing with you.
I know. Kat's not disagreeing.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying.
My perspective is I would go...
I refuse to give them any justification.
I would go to a stranger's funeral before I would go to a Marvel movie. And that's my take.
Okay.
Honestly, I would go to the funeral of, like, someone that I know a little, but that's it. But it's to support other people rather than go to a movie. Because a movie, like, yeah, I can turn off social media for 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already planning on, like, getting lit when Clarence Thomas and Trump kick it. So, like, if a movie comes out that weekend, it's just going to have to wait. Because the celebrating is going to be, like, it's going to have to come first.
Yeah.
We've gone off topic, thanks to Matt.
Well, listen, I tried to throw you a soft serve.
I know.
And you were like, no. Swatted it away. Swatted it away.
No.
Who's your side character that you like?
I will talk about my favorite Red Sister first, because Kat mentioned the Reds. And, yay, of course, it is Pavara, unpronounceable last name. Honestly, though, Pavara is like Madonna. Like, we don't need to know a last name.
Absolutely.
She just is. She's just Pavara.
Yes.
It's Pavara, bitch.
It's Pavara, bitch. That's a good title.
That is a
good
title.
I like that. It's Pavara, bitch.
We will have at least one Twitter of time person who will be very happy with that title.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yes. So... I like her first because she's a badass, and of course I love the badass characters, but to talk about showing that cultures aren't a monomyth, like, so you're born into the San Chan Empire, or you're born in Camelon, or you're born on the borderland, so, like, each of us talking is, like, born into the culture that raised us. We can't help it. We can help how we internalize that, I'm not saying that what Iganine did isn't impressive, because it's really impressive given how oppressive the San Chan Empire is. Mm-hmm. But what I find really intriguing about Pavara is that it's not just a culture that she's bucking against. She's bucking against a chosen culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is a culture that you are not born into. You can control whether or not you're in it, and you have full control over whether to accept the tenets and the traditions of that culture.
Mm-hmm.
And she bucks it. I mean, she's, you know, we joke about the man hating lesbian, but that was a little... Robert Jordan could have lightened up a little bit with that.
Just a tad.
And, like, yeah, her romance with Andral is whatever. Her romance with Brandon Sanderson is fine, but, like, whatever. she's, like...
You're not wrong.
It's not the most compelling part of her plot. She is a Black Aja hunter, which we didn't really get a lot of that with Red Sisters, because mm-hmm. Jordan was mostly focused on, ooh, this Red is a secret Black, or ooh, this Red is Elida, mm-hmm. and competent. But, like, Pavara gives us, like, the hero that we needed from the Red Aja. And I wrote in my notes that it addresses the Slytherin problem, even though I think mm-hmm. he wrote, I don't know how... So Pavara, I think, first appeared in The Crown of Swords.
That sounds right.
Which was contemporaneous with Harry Potter. And I'm not saying that Robert Jordan read Harry Potter. But, like, this, other than, like, you know, the author being a Holocaust-denying, transphobic piece of trash, the Slytherins in Harry Potter are always, like, they're villains. Like, mm-hmm. if you go to Hogwarts, you're either brave, you're smart, or you're evil, or... no one remembers who you are because you're always stoned in the basement.
Who's that?
And, like, the best Slytherin is Slughorn. Yeah. And he's, like, the only Slytherin who participates in the last battle at Hogwarts. And even then, it's like...
Even then,
it's self-serving.
Exactly. It's self-serving is the exact...
Yeah.
And I get, like, and it's not to say that there's not anything wrong with writing characters who are self-serving.
Right.
That's not... There's nothing wrong with that characteristics, but, like, don't make that their whole, like the whole identity of one house. Like, you know?
Right. And that's why I like... what Jordan and later Sanderson did with Pavara is that the Red Aja could...
I just have to say about the season that it's even frustrating because it's about people having ambition.
Right.
And it's like ambition being villainized.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm like, it's okay to have ambition.
It's so shitty.
It doesn't mean that you're an awful person.
Mm-hmm. No, it's like, it's what you're willing to do to get to where you want to go. Like some people can climb to the top without hurting a single person. Or they want to climb to the top without hurting a single person. And some will just be ruthless.
Yeah.
And like, it's about your choices and how that manifests in you. And it's the same with like Ravenclaws / the Brown Aja, like the quest for knowledge. Like, are you going to do research and like read as much as you can and honor the cultures in which you go to learn from? Or are you going to trample over them and colonize them?
Yeah.
And take that knowledge from them and then put that knowledge in the British Museum?
Yes.
Like, It's about choices and it's about how you manifest that particular characteristic.
Yeah.
And Turf K. Rowling never really addressed that in the series. Like, oh, you're brave. Ooh, you're smart. Ooh, you're ambitious. Ooh, you're other.
Yeah. It's so unbelievably basic.
It is.
Like you're other. It's so basic. And I know like
who the hell is a Hufflepuff?
What the hell is a
This is Harry. He's courageous. This is Cho Chang, who just happens to be Chinese, and that just happens to be her name. And she just happens to be really smart because Asians are, I mean, not that Asians are smart, but, you know, she just happens to be smart, and she's a Ravenclaw. And here's Draco.
For no reason whatsoever.
Exactly. And here's Draco Malfoy. He's, you know, he's emo and evil. And here's Cedric. He's a poofter,
poofter,
and a stoner.
Yeah.
What am I saying? Cedric wasn't a poofter. JK would never.
And apparently he's shiny under the light. I know that's in another movie.
What? He's what?
Oh, he's sparkly. It's Twilight.
Oh, yes.
Sorry.
I just want to say, I love, like, the Twilight movies are so bad, but I love how Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart have
little
freaks. They've become freaks and have embraced their freakness, and I love that.
Their pivot to just, like, you know, like anytime it's addressed to them, just being like, yeah, that was a silly thing we did, huh? That was a silly little thing we did. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially Kirsten, who was very much like sweet girl at first. And now she's like, fuck everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love it.
So Jordan could have done that with the Red Aja. Like, oh, they all like their purpose is hunting down and stilling men who can channel. And by the way, most of them are also lesbians and most of them hate men. He could have done that, but he created Pavara, who essentially let him get around the Slytherin problem by being a complex character who participates in the hunt for the Black Aja. And I think she's along with Serene and Yukiri and a few others. Mm-hmm. So like
she has a Peter friend there.
Yeah.
Which one is it? Is it Cianin?
Cianin.
One of the Aes Sedai's.
Cianin is the what? It's Cianin. That used to be her pillar friend. Yeah.
Okay. So she's like also like not so ambiguously queer. So like that's another thing. And not only that, she works with other Ajas, and it is implied that she is going to be the future of the Red Aja and their shifting purpose in this post-cleansing, post-last battle world. And, like, I find it so admirable. Like, if you buck the trend of the culture you're raised in and you're born in, that's fantastic and that's great. But, like, if you buck the culture of a chosen, or if you buck the trends and traditions of a chosen culture, that's even more awesome, which I think is probably behind a lot of my second character's rationalization. But we'll talk about him later.
Regarding Pavara, I feel like she does for the Red Aja what Egwene tries to do for the Wall of the White Tower.
Yes.
In terms of like changing traditions and modernizing things.
Yeah.
I do have one. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say there's a reason why so many people in the fandom love her. Like, she is a very well-loved, like, side kind of character, but she's, like, she makes a big impact on the latter half of the series.
She does. And hey, you know, even Brandon Sanderson decided to marry her. But the one last thing I have to say about Pevara is that when I was doing my research to, like, refresh my mind on her, because we all know that I have the brain of a possum and nothing sticks with me. I went on the Wheel of Time wiki, and someone named Hexen426 used and uploaded Midjourney filth crap to my Sweet Pevara's page.
Yeah.
I just want to say that that's not art. That is not my Pevara. My Pevara is better than any AI garbage that you could generate with your little tech bro keyboard nonsense.
Tech bro keyboard.
So if you're listening,
is not,
or if you know anybody who puts Midjourney, yeah, I know.
I know.
If you know anybody who's put Midjourney crap up on this, just, you're trash, and you should be ashamed of yourself, and you're not an artist, and you never will be.
Don't do that.
You will never be an artist. And you will never do anything creative or create anything worth remembering in this life.
Oh my God.
Okay, so that's my Pevara.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk about how if you use AI to make your quote-unquote art, you will never be an artist or create anything worth remembering. Thank you.
I'm going to have to tell you, Matt, I think you need to really workshop that title. It's very worth it.
And those art are so basic. I'm just looking at that.
Yeah.
It's like twice the same picture in like a bit different, and both of them look like the original, like the top picture was actually drawn by someone. It's so lazy.
And you know her fingers are jacked up.
Of course they are. Of course they are.
Like, there are two others. So, like, there's the Pevara, the Pevara that you see in the top of the page, like, she has a haunted look behind her eyes. She's looking at the person in sort of a haunted way, and it's pretty. And then the second one is with her and Brandon Sanderson, art by Adam Masterman, and, like, it's a different art style. It's not quite my art style, but, like,
it's a pretty picture.
Really nice.
A person went behind this. Like, it's art.
Yeah.
That's personality.
Yeah, it has personality. Like, they have personalities. The two characters. Like, Pevara and Brandon both have personalities in this picture.
Stop calling him Brandon, please.
No.
Insisting on calling him Brandon. Oh, my God.
Okay, that's all I have. That's all I have for Pevara.
Can we?
Yeah, nothing to say. Fuck AI.
I mean, we meant to say, do you have another character?
Yes,
fuck AI as well.
I mean, yes, fuck AI, but also, do you have another character to bring?
I honestly, I didn't know what to pick as other side character. I have a spreadsheet with, you know, I think it's the top 250 characters, like the most mentioned in the book. I did not compile that list. It's available online, whatever. So I looked through it to find out what other characters I do like. So I'm not gonna go on big rants on those characters, but very quickly, I used to like Elias a lot when I was reading those books, because I don't know, maybe I relate to the lone wolf vibe. It made me laugh that he would disappear for many books and then suddenly show up, and I would be delighted to find him again. And then when you learn a little bit about him, he got the tragic backstory. He used to be a warder, apparently was married to his Aes Sedai, and then the Wolf Brother thing started, and the Red Aja tried to gentle him because they thought he was channeling. So he ran away, and apparently his bond never got broken with his Aes Sedai, and she's masking him. And I don't know, is that in order to find him again one day, or is that just to keep track and ensure he's still alive? I don't know. I like him. Other than that, like, is Varin a side character?
I don't think Varin is a side character.
Yeah, I don't know.
She starts as a side character, but she has so much presence in those books.
I think she's a secondary character.
Yeah.
I would classify her as a secondary character.
Yeah.
I think she does she does a little too much cooking.
she does a lot.
Yeah, she does a lot.
I did want to give an honorable mention to Sorelia, who is a wise one. Mm-hmm. But that's only because I think she would be the perfect girlfriend to Katsuane. So.
Yeah, I agree.
Let the Gilf be lesbians too.
Exactly.
Title? Let the Gilf be lesbians.
Let the Gilfs be lesbians too.
I like it's Pavara bitch.
I know. Matt's like, no, it has to be it's Pavara bitch.
Oh yeah, Pavara bitch is a great one. Yeah, so that's pretty much it for my other side characters.
I love Elias. I am right there with you. He's a very good. I am hoping that we get to see more of a consistent presence from him throughout the, like, on the show.
The actor is so good. He is so
good. The actor is so
good. Yeah, it was pretty good in season 2.
When I saw he was cast, I was like, oh, he's going to be so good in this role. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Weren't we also, this might be off topic, like, mm-hmm. were we, was this the casting where we were like, oh, my God, finally a dark-skinned actor who doesn't play an evil person? Okay.
Yes.
I just had to make sure that was the one.
Yep. That was him. And we were we were like, oh, it's happened.
A cookie. A bone has been thrown.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. Maybe we should have an episode about that. I feel like season 2 did better on that topic.
We should do a follow-up episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah.
Kat, do you want to go with your
other
side character?
Yes.
Who's a great one again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love her so much.
She's so good.
Mistress of the Kitchens, Laris. And we don't have a last name. She is, in my notes, I said that she is the basically an international woman of mystery.
Oh, yes.
Because that's her. That is her, basically.
Oh, my God. What if Laris is the creator?
I believe it.
Avatar of the creator.
I believe it. If it could be.
Sure.
Listen. Yes, I believe it. I'm into this.
This is my new crack theory.
This is the new crack theory. I'm all about this.
Loony theory for Jonathan. Mm-hmm.
I'm all about this. Yeah, she is like, it's, once again, Robert Jordan creates really good characters. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that we've been through this, like this is a lot of what we talk about, but like the depth that he's able to give a character like Laris, who's really only like, in and out of the stories in very specific circumstances, but the impact that she has on the story is huge. She's the, for people who don't know, she's the mistress of kitchens. She runs it that is her lair. That is her place. Nobody messes with that. She is very strict when she needs to be, but she is also very much about not punishing people who do not deserve to be punished. And that is an ongoing theme for her throughout the series, where like, yeah, if someone's done something wrong, sure, send them to me, but I am not going to break their spirit. Mm-hmm. That's not what I do. That is not my vibe. It's not my thing. It's not about that. And it happens several times. How many times? So it's the first, let me go back, because the first time that we see her is in New Spring. And she's watching Swan and Moraine being fruity on Maine. They're just being fruity in the kitchen. And she was like, in front of my salad, basically. So that's the first time we meet her. And then Nynaeve, Egwene, and Elaine are sent to her for punishment. And she's like, yeah, okay, I'll punish them. But again, I'm not doing anything that is overbounds. Like I'm not breaking them. So we're not going to do that. And she shows like there's a sternness to her, but there's an obvious level of compassion. I think that comes with that too. She also takes Min under her wing when she is when Min is at the White Tower, which like Min sorely needed someone to like sort of be in her corner, because Min is so out of her depth when she's in the White Tower. And it's really cool that someone like, you know, it's someone like Laris is like, okay, I can see that this person, she needs someone. Then one of the two big things that she does is she's the one that helps Min free Swan and Lyanna when they're still then deposed, which is like, I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine if she wasn't there? If she wasn't there to do this? The story wouldn't exist.
Maybe we'll have to figure out in season three.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait. But yeah, she's able to get them out. She's able to help Min. And then again, when Egwene is imprisoned in the White Tower, she tries to do essentially the same thing for Egwene. And Egwene is able to clock and say, wait a second, this woman knows her way around this like sort of back area. I think they're in like a cellar or something like that. She knows her way around here far too much for this to be the first time that she's doing this. And it's kind of, I mean, essentially implied that she's done this before for other people in the White Tower. It is my personal headcanon that some of the people that we meet in the kin, maybe not necessarily the named people, but the people that we meet in the kin, they could very well be people that she helped get out of the tower for whatever reason. We know next to nothing about her. We know that she's incredibly intelligent and she's like super savvy and she's like very strategic in her thinking and she's able to be really sneaky. But like we have no other context to her aside from that. And I kind of love it. I hope we never get anything. If she does show up, I don't think we didn't get her on the show, right?
No. I doubt we'll get her.
It doesn't mean that we won't. I know, yeah, but she's true. She's a comparatively minor side. But thank you for coming to my Laris TED Talk. Mm-hmm. She is amazing. I hope, like, even if we get like a hint of her in the show, I hope we don't learn anything more about her because I love that she's just this presence. She's this like comforting presence for the women and girls who pass through the White Tower, and she is someone that is strict, but someone who is super reliable, and yeah. I love that. Like, she gives off, like, a very, like protective butch energy that is very much, like it's something that I really appreciate, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's the creator.
And she's the creator, yes.
Everything that you said is just, like, more evidence to that.
I agree. I agree.
So, is it my turn for our last side character?
Yes.
Okay. This is not going to surprise anybody because he is one of my favorite characters, and I also think that he is much maligned in the fandom. And that is...
Gawain.
Fuck Gawain. His old ratty ginger ass deserve what he got. So, it's Galad Damodred, of course. I love him. He is infuriating, but also really, I don't want to say inspiring, but also like, I don't know, not inspiring, but like something that's less that. He's more complex than people think. On the Watt Wiki, there's a quote of him saying, "I do have a sense of humor, Gawain. He only think I do not because I do not care to mock people." Okay, well, he didn't really have much of a sense of humor throughout the rest of the series, but I like the sentiment, and that's a good summation of who he is as a character. I think, again, it goes with breaking stereotypes. Like, again, we have the book cloaks. I mean, not the book cloaks. Oh. The white cloaks.
Oh.
A less insidious group. and, again, this is a culture that is chosen. It is not a culture that is he was born into. And he does have a very strong moral compass. But here's the thing. I saw some people saying that Galad would have been at the White House on January 6th. And I think that if you say, like, the people who said that, you fundamentally misunderstand who he is. He has such a strong moral compass in which he is convinced that he is right. But when he is presented with evidence that he actively does not like and does not want to see, he says, "I have no choice but to change my mind because the facts just do not fit my worldview. Thus, my worldview has to change or else I'm just not connected with reality anymore." And you first see these cracks starting to break with the fight with Emond Valda, in which he believes that Valda raped and killed his stepmother, Morghais. Also, no straight man is going to go to bat for stepmommy as though it was mommy. Like, she is his mom, and he is a mama's boy, and no one will commit a honorable, justifiable homicide and change the entire makeup of an organization and be straight. I'm just saying.
I will just say that I don't like saying that he's fighting just for his stepmom because it's his mom.
Right, that's true.
Like, his mom has left since he was like a kid when his mom left.
Yeah.
Morgase has raised him since
she raised him. Yeah.
He was able to remember anything. It's his mom.
Yeah.
That's his mom.
We don't care that it's not his blue mom. It's his mom.
I guess for me, so like where I'm coming from with this is like,
yeah, I get it.
In the US South, like there's very much a culture of blood is the most important aspect of family. And if you're not blood family, it's not quite the same.
It's not real family.
Yeah. I don't agree with that. I disagree with it. But that informed how I read Galad's situation. I also like how you read it too. Like, you know, maybe in Randland, family is, you know, just who took care of you. Mm-hmm. But like, that's my perspective is like, you know, when I was growing up, if, you know, like I have family members who has told other family that children are not their actual grandchildren or nieces or nephews because there is no blood relation.
Oh, yikes.
Like, I have straight up had family members say, well, that's not your real grandson.
Yikes.
Because you're not related by blood.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I put that emphasis on it. I mean, you know, your mileage may vary. I guess it just depends on, like, various things.
Makes sense.
But either way, it's like, it's like the fact that he goes to bat for her.
Mm-hmm.
Big non-hetero vibes. I'm sorry. Like, what straight man would, like, fight for a woman like that?
Well, and also, I am very much of the belief, like, obviously, like, the emotions are, like, were, like, super heightened.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he would do that for anyone.
I do, too. And I
I really do. Like, because that is, he has such a strong, like you said, he has such a strong moral compass that, like, I don't think he would be able to live with himself.
Yes.
And not do anything, you know?
I mean, the worst thing about doing a trial for Perrin for two White Cloaks that died when he wasn't even White Cloak yet and he wasn't in charge of the White Cloak, but that's the rules and rules needs to be respected and this kind of thing.
They need to be followed,
And then he, you know, Galad sees, like, he is, you know, I think at first he thinks that Galad is being attacked by Perrin, but realizes that Perrin is fighting Trollocs, and like he is convinced that Perrin is just evil, and he's because it's what he's been told by everybody in his organization. But then he sees very clear evidence to the contrary, and he's like, "This is not what I expected, but I'm gonna roll with it, and I'm gonna change what I think based on the facts before me." And he ends up convinced that Perrin is in the dark, friend, and that ultimately is a huge win for the light because Perrin and Galad combine their forces in a way that you simply wouldn't be able to do if you didn't have, one, that's a strong moral compass, and two, the willingness to admit that you're wrong, which is something that it's a quality that so many people just do not talk about or value.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
So when people say, oh yeah, Galad would have been at January 6th. No, the actor who's playing him would be. Galad himself would not be.
Yes, exactly.
Galad would leave the Republican Party after January 6th.
Right. And I don't even think, like, I don't know why, like, he has conservative vibes. Like,
I mean, he's royalty. There's kind of a vibe with that.
I can see, I see why.
I can see him being like a Republican, like by tradition and this kind of thing.
Right.
And then leaving the Republican Party when Trump arrives and it just goes to hell.
See, I just, I see him more of like, there's a, some guy in a business suit, like super conservatively dressed, holding up an anti-Vietnam War sign. Like, he's not he's not a hippie, he's not yelling or chanting, he's just standing there.
He's just Galad.
And like, that's what I imagine Galad would be like. Galad, like, was like, well, this war is heinous and this is unjust, and I'm gonna go out and protest. I'm not gonna, like, grow my hair out and, like, start singing songs. I'm gonna stand out here in my White Cloak suit with a sign saying, you're wrong for this war. And that's it. So, like,
very matter of fact.
I think he is misunderstood a lot in the fandom.
Yeah.
And I think the qualities that people hate on him for are actually some of his best qualities. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Yes, I ship him and Matt Coffin. We know this. This is not new. Before any of you come in the comments saying that you think a guy because he's... Yes, I know. I know. We all know.
Two things can be true. Listen.
The only part about Galad I don't like is that he is foisted off onto Berylane, who I don't like and I've never liked. Wow. And I know she's hot. We call her mommy, but I just don't like her. And I didn't buy their romance.
I think it was a little ham-fisted. Like, it was just a little bit...
It's just because they are two pretty person, and yeah. Jordan is not good at romance anyway.
No, he's right. not. No, he's not.
He's not.
And Sanderson either.
And this is like, Galad is a homo, and Jordan didn't know how to cope with that, so he just paired him off with, like, the closest pretty woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a complicated relationship about Berylane.
Me too.
And I think a lot of the fandom does.
Yeah.
Because I feel like she had potential and just...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just literally just about to say, she has... I think there is a lot of potential in her character. I think, unfortunately, the way that she's written does a disservice to her potential, unfortunately.
She doesn't deserve the way she was written.
No.
No. No. And I think Berylane is one of the... Oh, sorry, you were saying something?
Oh, I was just saying it's too bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, people defend Berylane saying, oh, she's, you know, she has this small kingdom and she doesn't know what else to do, so she just uses her body. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, well, how many ways could someone use what little advantage they have in a way that's not sexist? Like, and we know that if Berylane had been a man or, like, let's say Berylane is like a teenage boy, so someone else who's vulnerable in this socio-political environment but wouldn't be subject to the same, you know, sexist, I have boobs and I'm gonna use them and you're gonna protect my country because boobs.
The thing is that regarding Berylane, she's slut shamed all the time. Do you know with how many people she has actually slept with?
Yeah,
it's like two or three.
Yeah, probably two or three.
It's nothing.
Yeah,
it's nothing.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you know, here at Crows of Time, like, if Berylane had sex with, like, 20 men and 30 women, like, good for her. Mm-hmm. You know, good for her for having that. I feel in a series with so many well-written lady characters, Berylane felt like a step back. And it's like, and people do use their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it's but I think, you know, if Berylane had been a man and did the exact same thing, I don't think that she would get as much, or he would get as much flack. I still would be annoyed.
Absolutely, he wouldn't. I mean, I love Matt as a character. Matt Coffin is right there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Matt Coffin is right there. Mm-hmm. He does some questionable things regarding consent.
He pretty much sexually harassed any tavern girl.
Yeah, it's like and people are more than willing to bypass that. Like, more than willing to bypass that. Berylane has not done anything. Like, she hasn't done anything to that level. And so it's always a struggle for me because, like, yes, I get she's not a super well-written character and her potential isn't reached. But
it's a level of hate she gets into fandoms that gets.
Yeah, sometimes it makes my eyebrows go all crazy because I'm like, okay, let's pause a minute here and look at some of the actions of, like, main characters throughout the series. Matt. You know? And it's nowhere near the same level of, like, of hate. And it's, like, let's call a spade a spade. It's misogyny.
Right.
It's misogyny. Yeah. Even if we may not recognize it's internalized misogyny. Like, it's, you know.
And at the same time, like, the thing is that with a lot of misogyny topic, I also feel bad about, like, heavily criticizing, for example, the author for that. Because when we talk, for example, about some of the behaviors that Matt has with respect to sexual harassment and things, there's a lot of stuff in our society with respect to sexual harassment that we've only been aware for less than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, street harassment. something that pretty much like a generation before us, everyone was like, no, it's perfectly fine. It's normal. Yeah. It's a way to flatter women and that's it.
Yeah.
And so the conversation about this topic has changed so much in our society. Then when I'm looking at those old books that shows all of those bad tropes that we do not want to see anymore today. I'm like, it's true. But it's a bit of a product of its time. It's complicated things to talk about.
I think it is fair to criticize Bera Lane and what she does. But if you do, I think you should also be criticizing Matt and the men who do these props. So like, I just don't enjoy reading Bera Lane. I just don't.
Fair. Yeah.
And like, it's when I read characters like Egwene and Nynaeve and Moraine, and even... Elida. Elida.
That was a struggle.
Even when I'm reading, like when I read characters like them that are just so dynamically well written, and then I see, oh, woman using boobs. It's like, okay, so first of all, that's basically what she does because Jordan had his misogynist glasses on. Also, like, who would blame her in her situation?
And also, so what?
But also, it can be annoying to read. And also, so what? Like, it's annoying to read, but so what?
Yeah.
It's just so complicated.
It is. Yeah.
And I feel I easily buy, you know, as a man, I have the final say on what's misogynist and not, obviously. when I hear, like, complaints of, oh, you're a misogynist for hating this character, I more readily buy that argument with Bera Lane than I do with Fael, because there are many men in the series that behave like Fael, who I also hate.
That's fair.
Like, Fael does not...
I know.
I will put it this way. Bera Lane...
Sorry, I'm laughing because I've literally thought the same thing. Like, when people are like, oh, but it's like, you know, if it was a man, and I'm just like, I would hate that man too.
Uh-huh.
I would dislike that man as well.
And Fael, my main issue with Fael is that we only see her from Perrin's eyes, and Perrin is not fair with how he's treated Fael, because Perrin is always sniffing feelings and then assuming that people are behaving in a certain way because of the feeling. Like, the thing is that we feel like Fael is a fucking jealous person constantly and is giving Perrin a hard time for that. She never acts on it.
No.
Oh, see, I don't think she's jealous.
No.
I think she's just... I think she's just an ass. I think she's just a heinous asshole.
Which, you know what? Sometimes people are assholes, and that's okay.
And that's okay. Well, not for her, but like...
Well.
So with Bera Lane, you know,
I feel like Fael is a lot more, it's funny, but during the time she's away from Perrin and you see Fael's POV, she's a character that I like a lot more than when we see her with Perrin, because Perrin's POV about Fael sucks.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, Bera Lane being a woman is a large part of why people have an issue with what she does.
Yes.
Fael being a woman is no excuse for her jackass behavior. That's my view on it.
That's fair.
And I know some of y'all love Fael. Bless your hearts. I know you do. And I don't. And that's okay.
Fael would be a man would be the same issue, because the issue is not Fael. The issue is Perrin. No,
the issue is Perrin.
I'm sorry. The issue
lies with Perrin.
I don't like Perrin either. I don't like that motherfucker either. I don't like neither of them. I don't mess with either of them.
We here on the Queers of Time podcast, we make sure that we spread the love. Or in this case, we spread the hate.
I get like the Fael is filtered through Perrin's perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. This still doesn't make Fael an enjoyable character for you, and that's it.
No.
Right. Because there's
it's just fine.
There's objective perceptions and there's subjective perceptions. Like Camille asks me, how are you doing? And I say fine. Mm-hmm. Well, Camille could read that as me saying, I'm fine. Or she could read me saying as fine, leave me the fuck alone. And like through Camille's perspective, like Camille filters that. But if Camille asks me, how am I doing? And I say, who the fuck do you think you are talking to me like that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need Camille's subjective POV. You don't need Camille's subjective POV to determine that I'm a dick.
I will.
And that's my issue.
Unfortunately, need the quote. but that's fine. I just think that as with many things with those books need a lot of nuances to be able to talk about them.
100%.
And this, especially on Twitter, there's a lot of people jumping to conclusion and having seeing everything in black and white. I'm like, oh no, everything is fucking gray.
No,
it's 50 shades of gray in that book.
No, no.
And you know what? Because we're just coming off of it, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say something very brave right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the Grinwell Cup is the place where you need to be having these big fucking think pieces.
Right.
Vote for who you want to vote for and move on.
Yeah.
We don't need to do all this.
Do you know who I voted for when she came up? Grendel. And I would do it again.
I think there's also, like, in the Grinwell Cup, I also saw a lot of people making, like, big, bold statement. Uh-huh. And I don't think a lot of them were very serious about their statement. And I think a lot of the statements were taken very seriously.
They were taken seriously.
And then I was saying, like, you know, how do you call that when you're tweeting about someone, but you're not directly tweeting at them, you're tweeting about them? Yeah, I saw a lot of subtweeting about some stuff. And I'm like, I don't think that person is particularly serious about what they're doing.
Yeah.
They could do that with a lot more nuances.
Yeah. It's like,
and this
listen.
Kind of thing. I feel like I just, honestly, I voted, and sometimes I voted with a Queer of Time account and other accounts.
Because we all did. I think we all voted with a Queer of Time account.
When there was one, like there were a couple times where I would log in and see that someone already voted. I'd be like, either yay or shit.
Yeah, same. It's just a cup, and like it's not the place for discourse.
It's just fun.
The only thing I was doing, like once in a while, I would like quote tweet with something about how much I love the character or something like that. And I was like, I think I tried never to quote, like never to tweet about the person I was not voting for.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like in that cup, it's kind of like instead of being this or this, oh no, that person is very bad compared to that person that is very good, just say, oh yeah, I love that person because why this, and then move on.
Campaign for who you want to campaign for, and you don't need to mention.
If you gotta have discourse, bring that shit onto your own TL and do not harass Allie and Gus.
Don't be weird. And just, I mean, this is just in general too. Like, if you have the discourse, have the discourse. For sure.
Somewhere else.
Have the conversation. But just like be aware that Twitter is not the ideal format, the ideal space for you to have a nuanced conversation.
If you want a nuanced conversation, start a podcast.
Yes. Do we want all of these people? Maybe we shouldn't. Well.
Anyway, it's an hour and 10 minutes. I love this conversation, but we should move on.
Let's wrap it up.
Well, that's our favorites, our problematic faves and our non-problematic faves, and our faves who are fully rounded human and cannot be called problematic or non-problematic because that's how real humans are.
Mm-hmm.
They're just our faves.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this very messy episode of The Queers of Time. If you're still around, well, great. Thank you. We are on Twitter, Tumblr, Blue Sky, Discord. Join our Discord. Our Discord is nice.
It's fun.
We have a Patreon if you want to support us so we can be on top of the bills for the podcast. And that's pretty much it. Thank you and see you next time.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye, Felicia.
Bye.
Thank you all for listening. This was Queers of Time, a Wheel of Time podcast. The music is Dance of the Witches by Julius H.